country music has a new star. The man taking the reins is at the same time a perfect but unlikely ambassador for the genre. He's an angelic tenor, full of Southern hospitality, personality, and charm, but also an openly gay man and a politically vocal rebel. His story is one you want to hear, and his future is one you want to be a part of. From Southern church pews to New York dive bars, the music of today's guest is sweeping the nation as he recently returned from a tour, including a stop at South by Southwest. Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Warehouse. I'm your host, Josh Johnson, and like always, we are joined with an incredibly special guest. Today, we have somebody that I think is going to make a really cool conversation. We have musician Wiley Gaby. Wiley, thanks for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me, Josh.
You know, our meeting was serendipitous. I was doing what I do on the weekends often, listening to some live music, having a libation, and I walk into the Blue Tavern, and I hear the most ethereal tenor that I think I've heard live in years, an incredible voice. And the genre that you orbit is obviously country, but there are so many different elements to it, which is going to be part of our conversation today, that I would just like you to know that it's a pleasure to have you on, and let's talk some music, and let's talk some life.
Well, the pleasure is mine. Thank you so much for saying that. That's so absolutely kind of you.
Absolutely. So, Wiley, the thing that cosmetically sticks out about you the most to me is the fact that you're, first of all, a very talented musician. But in the genre of country music, you're a gay man and a proud gay man and an open gay man and a trailblazing gay man. I'm sure there's a lot of good that comes with that and maybe some bad or some reticence. But just tell me a little bit about your perspective. How has it been to be an openly queer musician in the genre of country?
I think it's been confusing for both me and probably for some of the folks that have listened. I mean, but there was really never any question growing up that was like the kind of stuff that I wanted to do and the music that I loved. And just like so many things, you know, had no idea that any part of my identity would be a hindrance or a hurdle or anything like that until I got a little bit older and realized that I loved something deeply that probably didn't really love me back. You know, so I kind of rejected it for a bit and then came around. But what made it so much easier was when I moved away and went to Brooklyn, of all places, discovered this really, really large and talented and beautiful community of queer country artists. And of all places, I just did not expect to find that there. And there is this amazing queer country artist, Karen and the Sorrows, who used to curate this monthly country music, you know, celebrating the queerness of the artists and the singers and the songwriters. And I just was blown away by that. And so that kind of brought me back to the fold a little bit because I found a place where that was celebrated. And so so it's been since then and finding that community, it hasn't, you know, it hasn't bothered me so much. There have been moments where I feel impacted, you know, by it. Like definitely our posts on social media, especially with the current administration, are getting actively stifled and suppressed. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, there's fighting against that. But sometimes that just, I don't know, lights a fire under my butt to, you know, work a little harder and say, you know, bring it on.
You know, the thing that I would think is not a barrier at all is the fact that music is this great elixir or this great bridge or this great unifier. And once you're sitting as a spectator in an audience, it doesn't matter who's on the stage. It matters how what they're doing makes you feel.
100%.
And I cannot see somebody as talented as you having many problems with that, because the feeling, and I'm not, you know, the greatest aficionado of country music. I don't listen to it every chance I get. But even somebody like me, I was moved by your music and I was moved by your art. And I think that that's always been a bigger brush to paint with than identity.
Thank you. And I totally agree. And even growing up, it was a bit of a survival skill too, because where I may not have even with my family or my, you know, the males in my family, my father or the guys I grew up with down in Wakulla County, which is a rural area, very, very country. So we didn't agree on a lot of things. We still don't agree on a lot of things, but music was a way for me to sometimes get street cred with them in terms of like knowing who George Jones was and knowing how to sing certain songs and having that in my back pocket. So that could like maybe ease the blow of me not knowing how to throw like a boy or, you know, do other things that, that boys seem to like to do and that I was expected to do. But that was a connector. I mean, even when my dad and I have not seen eye to eye on things, he's always supported my music. We've always been able to agree on that in some capacity, which is great and super healing. And, sure. The interesting thing is most of the time in my shows lately, when I find that somebody has an emotional moment, sometimes it's my queer community, but frequently it's a grown man who appears to be not part of my community, at least just by our conversation, moved to tears about, you know, us from a song that was written by, you know, a gay man, a queer country tune. And there's no greater like compliment first off, but also just it feels like that is the magic of writing music.
That was a perfect segue. This type of magic and liberation that you talked about, you know, while I'm not a gay man myself, I have several gay heroes like Bayard Rustin or Jimmy mm-hmm. Baldwin or Harvey Milk. And one of the things that I hear them say always is this type of liberation in being who you are, which leads me perfectly into what was going to be the next question that we hit on. You have this huge hit that's buzzing all over the country and it eventually is going to be buzzing all over the world. And it's I Don't Give a F Anymore. Everybody can fill in what that F stands for. Mm-hmm. But while this song isn't about what we just talked about, there is like a liberative quality in it of letting go and being free and embracing whatever situation you are. Talk to us a little bit about your hit. Where did that come from and where does it take you?
It came from a number of things, but it's one of you know, this is a cliched story that people will tell you, but sometimes songs come real hard and sometimes they come real easy and sometimes they just kind of flow through you and you really do feel like, you know, it's not you writing it because it feels like it came without a certain amount of cost in the moment or grit or grist or whatever it is. But it started with a conversation between me and my father on a back porch that went a little prickly. And so, but then I started to think about, you know, things more and it became less about my relationship with him and just about, you know, the patriarchy in general. And, you know, I'm tired of, as I imagine lots of people are, compartmentalizing parts of myself, not coming whole to the party, to the table, to whatever it is, toning down, you know, pieces of me, to become palatable to someone else, and for what, you know, usually the juice isn't worth the squeeze, and being stifled by what other people expect of you. And I had a really lovely boss one time that said, you know, all parts of you are welcome here. And I thought, what a powerful statement, and why it shouldn't be novel, it shouldn't be revelatory. Like that just feels like something we should all be safe and comfortable to do. And so, yeah, like it started out about like, you know, screw you. And then it became like, really it's about loving yourself and saying, I am all these things and I don't come in parts for you. Mm-hmm.
So. As you arrive at this place and as you mature into this place, I'm sure a lot of your own experiences, mostly your own experiences, helped you get there. Were there any musical influences that you had that also helped you arrive at a place like that?
Oh, you know, Dolly Parton's always and forever been my number one. Before I was even really cognizant of it, I feel like there's like a picture of me posing as Dolly Parton at like 2 or 3 years old, you know, at my grandma's house. And she's always been there. And I couldn't be more grateful for having a hero who was like just really all the things that I could like, what a great role model. I think it's so exciting now that like, you know, she's becoming such, everybody is really seeing like her in all of her wholeness and not just like a caricature of a person or just just this one thing, but of all the wonderful things she's done. But this is not about Dolly Parton, so I can talk a whole like whole day about that on that topic. But Dolly is definitely the first, but also seeing, you know, Rufus Wainwright was an artist who was openly gay and proud and out, and I really, really loved his music. And seeing somebody, it felt so brave, but also just so, like, natural for him to do that. And I never really understood when I was younger that, you know, if I could, like, it doesn't really matter, right? Because, like, if the music is good, it doesn't really matter. And I still feel that way. But after seeing him do it so well and so just openly, I was like, well, I would never not be out and be who I am. And also, like, you know, some of the music that I'm trying to make now is country music for the little kid that I was growing up in the middle of the woods in Crawfordville, Florida, and trying to make it and make something that is like where you do belong here. This is no matter what you are, you know, just because you don't fit this bill, this expectation, like, we'll create a space for you and for, like, you know, where everyone belongs.
I'm so glad that you said Dolly Parton, because as she enjoys this renaissance that you were talking about, and as you are being born as the star that you're going to be one day at the same time, Dolly Parton has this really cool quote, and it says, find out who you are and then do it on purpose, right? Or something like that. And that was a perfect manifestation and explanation of how you're guiding your way through your career. I've heard you say that your music's everywhere between the church pews and the dive bar. And when I saw that at first, I said, you know what? Those things are diametrically opposed. And then I thought about it. Not really. Those places are actually places of deep confession, right? The pew is a confessional and the dive bar is a confessional. They are both confessionals. Is your music deeply personal, or do you use your music to do a personal thing? Does that make sense as a question?
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I love what you said about the church pews and the dive bars, and I feel like there could be a whole episode about that, and specifically queer spaces in general, where, like, you know, there's, you know, a whole nother layer of, you know, their import and creating sanctuary and safe space for people where, you know, for better or for worse, might be the only place that some folks feel safe is in that place. And I think similar to, you know, or the notion is similar to, you know, the ideals of a church. And your question, though, was about writing songs. And
are they confessional in their nature to you, or do you use them to do a personal thing, which
you
is
know
performing?
What? I find that they're the songs that I'm most proud of, and the songs that feel that, like, I think are my strongest work, are really honest confessional songs. And they're ways sometimes for me to process what I struggle to say in, you know, conversation or in, you know, everyday chatter. Sometimes a discussion is too hard, or the discussion is not going to work. And sometimes it's the therapy. Sometimes I don't need to have the conversation with somebody always. It's like, can I process this feeling and make art out of it and let there be a message that maybe can't do what I want to with this one person, but can do that, can first off heal me, which is the most important thing, right? And then also maybe, like, connect with some stranger in a bar who's listening to this song and feeling changed because of it, or just, like, heard because of it. Or I find that there are a lot of times, like, a lot of times it's to process, to say, like, gosh, I want to scream something, you know, if something political is happening that I feel like I am overwhelmed at, like, you know, sometimes writing my feelings in a song can help.
Yeah. Let's stay there for a second. You've gone back and revisited a couple of times in this interview about the political nature of things. And I have seen that you are an artist who has no problem taking a stance, especially publicly. And so I ask a question on this programming sometimes, which is, does art, or do artists have responsibility? Where do you fall on that? Is there a responsibility of an artist, or does art have responsibility to address social and political issues?
I think that my art has a responsibility to do it, because if I'm honest about what I'm feeling and what I'm experiencing, it would be too intrinsically entwined. I couldn't write an honest thing if I did not address that, at least at this point in my life and this point in the world. I do think that art has the power to change things, and I think that art has responsibility feels like a word I don't want to saddle on to other artists,
you
know, because everybody's got different things, you know, and different But I think for me, as somebody who, like, it's interesting because I am a gay man, but I'm also a white man. And so I have privilege, and I'm in, you know, a minority class, and these things can be true at the same time, and holding, so I think that my art specifically, it costs less of me to stand up for things, and I want to be an artist who also, like, stays on my values. So, like, you know, and also want people to, like, even if it's a younger queer person or a younger person in general who, like, you know, feels inspired by that in any way, shape, or form, that feels good, because that can exist in this, I don't know, in this world of country music and beyond that.
You know, you're so interesting to me. You have, like, this type of Truman Capote pitch to your voice, which is really high. And some of your songs are fast-paced. And so you're almost the perfect anecdote for a perfect pop star. But when you listen to some of these songs, especially some of the ones that I heard live, there's a certain weight and gravity to them. I don't want to put this answer on you, but I do remember hearing you mention the loss of a friend, a close friend that kind of aided or abetted your art form and helped you to work some things out and how you worked it out in your art. Let's talk a little bit about not so much of what you gotten has given you your art form, but about some of what you lost has done the same thing.
Yeah. You know, I have a friend who, you know, passed away. And
was it Emily?
Emily. Yeah,
Emily.
Yeah,
absolutely. I thought I remembered that. Yeah.
Emily Wilcher. She was just an amazing, amazing person who I moved to Nashville. Didn't really love my time there, but I know for, you know, without a doubt that I moved there to be put in the path of her and to have that connection. And so it was, that, you know, not what I thought my trip down there was going to be, and had this instant best friend who was just such an amazing light. And then, you know, she got sick and she was gone in six months. And it was devastating. And she also, like, was very, she went from being this very open person to, you know, kind of closing off. And she had her own way of, she wanted to, you know, exit the world on her terms. And so she wasn't super forthright with all the things. But I also found that when talking to my friends about my experience, where I just lost one of my best friends, or talking to some of our mutual friends about this experience, how uncomfortable everybody was with, and specific, I mean, everybody has a range of comfort level with talking about death and the grieving process. And I found it just interesting that I wasn't asking to talk to, like, throw my grief on them, but I was asking to, and I was trying to celebrate and, like, or make light or make a joke here and there. But the talk of death was so, like, anathema to everyone. It was, like, really fascinating, because I'm like, well, this is something that we all going to have to deal with at some point. So, like, I think that, like, part of the thing that I felt, like, empowered to do more is to, you know, tell these stories, and let's talk about, like, you know, this is a real thing that people go through. And if I can be buoyant about it and also, like, you know, maybe sing a real sad song about it, like, maybe that'll make it okay for us to have those conversations. Also, sometimes I'll sing that song on stage and I feel like, oops, I've killed the vibe.
No, you know, another thing that kind of comes up on this programming sometimes is something that I've always liked to say, that in a lot of ways, art is a way for people to outlive death or to beat death, because you're putting something into the world that will live much longer than you will live. And to hear kind of the opposite in your answer in a beautiful way, that sometimes the confrontation of that thing can be art or therapy or necessary in itself. I love that. Here's the closest that I'm going to come to putting you on the spot today. And I know you're never supposed to ask a musician this, but it's my show, and so I'm going to do it. It's really not that hard a question. Do you enjoy performing live more, or do you enjoy the intimacy of the studio more?
Oh, that's an easy one for me.
What is it?
I enjoy performing live more, for sure. It is, and the reasons why for me are aplenty. I'd love being in, you know, community with folks and being able to have that audience interaction and share that moment. I love being on stage, but also the studio is, you know, and I enjoy being in the studio. The studio feels painful. The studio feels high pressure sometimes. It's a totally different beast you're singing in, like, you know, you know, where they're like they're hearing every like breath you take, right? And it's so and it's just very different. The energy is totally different, and the pressure is high. So like, I'm learning to love it more. But at this stage in the game, performing live wins.
Hands down, huh?
Hands down.
As a fun question, if we were on a road trip, Wiley, and you had to put one artist on the aux cord to play, who would it be? Or did you already say it with
Dolly
Parton?
Well, since I've already said Dolly Parton, I'll have to say Nico Case because she's my number two.
Love it. I love it. Well, in your last answer, in closing, in your last answer, you said that sometimes the studio can be nerve-wracking because people can hear every breath you take. Well, I would like for you to know that on this episode of The Warehouse, you took our breath away.
Oh, my gosh.
We are looking so forward to seeing what you do, what you put out, and how you do it. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you so much at home for joining us for another episode of The Warehouse. See you next time. Bye-bye.